Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. Got another chapter read by Mike Mitten from One with the Wilderness, Passions of a Solo Bowhunter. And this chapter, chapter 11, we're heading north to Alaska. And it is called 40 Bulls. If after a hunting trip, a hunter indicates seeing 40 bulls, the general assumption would be he's hunted animals that are usually viewed as herding types, elk, caribou, or African plains antelope, for example. But after a three-week solo hunt in Alaska, I made over 40 bull moose sightings from a single drop camp location. I'm sure that I saw some of the bulls more than once, but that doesn't matter much to a Midwesterner who lives for multiple encounters with these massive animals. Let me tell you about some of them. It was supposed to be a two-week moose hunt along the south coast of Cordova with my friend Chris Stewart from Marinette, Wisconsin. Additionally, I was going to add an extra week of caribou hunting north of the Stony River after the moose hunt. Chris hunted caribou with his father during the week prior to our meeting in Anchorage. From there, we traveled together to meet our contact in Cordova. When we got there, we were told some disappointing news. It seemed the exceptionally cool summer failed to melt sufficient glacial ice, so the backwater areas were dry. We would not be able to get as deep into the wilderness as we would have liked. Chris hunted the previous years and knew we would need to get back toward the base of the Wrangells to have a chance at finding mature moose. Since there was going to be two additional hunters in the area, I did not feel comfortable with the new restriction. I decided on the spot to call the pilot who was going to fly me into the caribou hunt and asked if he had time to take me to a moose hunting area I already knew about. I told him I had taken a moose there previously and would be very comfortable going back again. I flew back to Anchorage, and the next morning I arrived at the outfitter's headquarters in Willow. I could only imagine what he thought as I climbed out of a taxi cab with my gear. Hunting in Alaska is always an adventure. The outfitter was going to make a fuel run and check on some hunters. There was room to take me into my moose spot, so I piled in. When the plane landed on the secluded lake near the base of the Aleutian Mountains, memories came flooding back to me. Little had changed during the 7 years I had been here, and I was betting on the moose being here as well. I did not plan on staying at the lake, so I cached some of my supplies about 80 yards from the lake and packed the 2 miles to the top of the tall hill we dubbed Gloom Mountain the last time we hunted here. This time I would have the area to myself, and what a great area it was. With my tent securely anchored and all tie-outs attached to a dwarf birch, I walked over to the south side of the hill to look for moose. I was surprised to see 4 bulls bedded near each other about 300 yards from the base of the hill. 2 of them looked very nice, with antlers over 60 inches wide, while the others were legal, over 50 inches wide, but not mature enough to spark my efforts. Besides, I could only watch and film this first day since I had flown in on a plane and it was not legal to hunt the same day you were airborne. Even from my elevated vantage point, it amazed me how the 4 moose continually fed off each other and would completely disappear into the willows and tag alder bushes. The 2 hours that I observed these bulls provided much enjoyment and information. It was opening day of moose season, and it seemed that these bull moose were still in a loose bachelor association. It was the last time I saw that many bulls together with no cows in sight. Bow hunters are fueled by multiple sightings of their intended prey, and I was not any different. This was an exceptional first day, and I hoped that they would only get better as the rut started. Making my camp up high was a great opportunity for me because I could sleep in a little bit later in the morning and then simply jump out of my sleeping bag at first light and start hunting. Glassing to the north, I checked out the 2-mile strip of swamp, willows, alder brush, and black spruce between Gloom Mountain and the lake where my pilot dropped me. The cover was great, and there were many rolls in the terrain, but over the course of my hunt, I saw much less moose activity on this side of the hill compared to the south side. The south side was the main reason I returned to this place, because after a slight incline over 2 miles that leaves the base of Gloom Mountain, the hill turns into a steep slope upwards with over 1,500 foot increase in elevation. Glassing the full range of this theater, I found it difficult to locate moose in the lower flat area near Gloom Mountain that were not moving. In contrast, just about any moose was easily spotted, whether walking or bedded, on the north-facing slope of the ever-expanding ridge. If bulls were seen crossing in the distance, I used a spotting scope to assess size and maturity. Since I have previously taken a mature bull whose antler scored over 200 inches, I respected these animals enough and was looking forward to an opportunity to get close to another bull of similar quality. The moose in this area are not known for extremely wide antler spreads, but I had seen many with multiple brow points and brow palms lined with forward tines. Since when a 50-inch bull presents itself or responds to my calling, I tried to capture it on film, but didn't get out of my way or exert too much energy trying to get to it. If I left the hill to get a bull, I would sacrifice visibility, and I know it might take several hours to climb back up to my hilltop camp. I had to go down every few days anyway to fetch water and carry it back up to camp in a 5-gallon collapsible jug tied to my frame pack. Reluctance to leave my perch unless I saw a worthy bull left me kind of stagnant at times. To stay active, I would alternate walking to all four sides of the hilltop, which was about 60 yards wide and 300 yards long at the plateau. I would glass for 1 to 2 hours at a time, rotating sides throughout the day, but the vast majority of the time I spent watching the south side. Eventually, a very nice bull popped out of the alder brush and started feeding in the willows. He was about halfway up the south slope, where there was very little black spruce. I could tell that his antlers were just out of velvet and had yet to take on the dark stain from blood and rubbing. His rack would sway from side to side and bob up and down as he nipped at the tender willow shoots. If I left right away, I would get to him before he went on the prowl for cows. Early in the season, bull moose behave as most others in the deer family and will respond more readily to calling. It's much more difficult to get a response from them once they have cows with them. As I approached the area where I thought he was, I slowed down and found a nice place to stand and listen, hoping to hear some crashing of horns on the brush. I soon heard antlers thrashing from the other side of the wall of tag alders. He had moved. Finding a trail through the alders was easy, but sneaking past without making a sound required patience and deliberate movement. Moose have large ears that work very efficiently, capturing the slightest of sounds, and perking them up behind a massive dish of antler bone can increase hearing efficiency by as much as 20%. By the time I got through the alders and into the willow park on the other side, the bull had moved off. It was clear he had stopped feeding and was traveling cross-country. I would not be able to keep up with the bull, so I decided to cow call to him. I let out a long, mournful cow and heat call using my vocal cords and a rolled-up birch bark funnel in front of my mouth. I listened, but could no longer hear the bull. I was pretty sure the bull must have heard me, but I figured he was not in the mood. I called again, but still no response from the bull. He had moved on, reaffirming that there were no magic bullets when it comes to calling. Nothing works every time, but trying different approaches keeps my hopes alive. I wished I had gotten a better look at the bull, because I think he was one of the big ones I saw on the first day. The next morning, I heard a rifle shot coming from the area near the lake I was dropped in. Using my spotting scope, I could see two hunters move out into an open marsh toward a freshly fallen moose. They must have been flown in the day before when I was on the south side of Gloom Mountain, going up after the bull in the willows. I watched as they began boning out the moose. At one point, I could see one of the men lift the antlers. They must have been resident Alaskans, because the bull's antlers were less than 40 inches wide and would not have been legal for a non-resident. After leaving and glassing for a while on the other side of the plateau, I returned to see how the rifle hunters were doing. I got there just in time to see them carrying the last load to their camp. They camped right on the lake shore, and they shot the moose about a quarter mile away from the lake. A couple of days later, I was again glassing north toward the lake. I could see a grizzly bear on the site where the hunters killed the moose. They had since been picked up by a float plane, but the remains of the bull they killed was providing a feast for the bear. He must have been on the moose for a little while, since he had already had the remains buried under a pile of earth and vegetation. I watched as he played with the scapula bone and tossed it into the air. After a while, I saw him laying on his back as if sunning himself on the mound of dirt he had created. He obviously ate his fill and had fallen asleep while guarding his cache of bones, entrails, hide, and discarded meat scraps. Later in the afternoon, I watched as a white wolf had discovered the bear and was trying to force him off the kill. The wolf would charge in and bite at the bear, but the bear would have none of it, swatting at the wolf with his paws. Their sparring took place for over 20 minutes, with the agility of the wolf drawing the bear further and further from the moose. I was thinking that at any time more wolves would come and do a better job of harassing the bear away from his prize. This time of year, the winter's scorn threatening in a few weeks, every morsel becomes so valuable. But to my surprise, the wolf was alone and eventually left the bear to have his meal. The next day, the bear was still on the mound, but suddenly he stood up on his hind legs and intensely watched while a sow grizzly and her half-grown offspring came up a slope, strolled out into the open, circling the first bear. The bear on the mound followed the pair's movements with his eyes and then dropped down on all fours and tore it up, running out of there. It was curious to me that the bear defended his cache so fiercely against the wolf, but then quickly fled as soon as another bear showed up. The first bear appeared slightly larger than the sow, but obviously it recognized some degree of increased dominance in her. He didn't even put up a fight. The sow and cub took over the mound and began digging to find what was left. I surmised that there was probably not much left due to the requirement of meat removal by hunters and the fact that the first bear had never left during the past 3 days. By the end of the day, the two bears were also gone. I never saw any more bears on the kill site. During the next few days, I called in several bulls. Young bulls with antlers in the 3 to 4 foot range come in quite readily to my simulated cow and heat calling. I have watched them come in from over a mile and a half away. By the time they get to me, their nostrils were running and dripping with fluid. These bulls were not legal for me to take, but they were educational and I filmed many of them. I don't want to get them in too close because in this rut-crazed state of mind, they can be very dangerous. After making sure there was no other mature bulls coming in, I would quietly slip away and leave the young bulls in a frustrated state of confusion. As the season wore on, the willow leaves turned yellow and many fell off. Also, much of the tag alder brush turned void of leaves, and what were once deep green thickets now appeared as gray patches on the landscape. Moose were becoming more visible with the reduced cover, and calling was more effective. I once called in 3 different bulls. As they responded and started to work their way towards me, I dropped down lower on the hillside and eventually lost much of my field of view. 2 of the bulls may have been worth taking, but by the time they got within 60 yards, it was too dark to see. With the light-gathering capabilities of the 10x40 Zeiss binocular, I could clearly see the bulls, but not too well with my naked eye. By the time the biggest bull came in, he had dug down into the swamp with his antlers, collecting a huge pile of sod and sticks tangled in his tines and laying on his palms. It looked like he had a muskrat hut sitting on top of his head. The 2 mature bulls did not have long bells hanging down from their dollop, but the younger bull did have a 2-foot length of skin still hanging and swinging down below the main fold of skin under his throat. Now it was my turn to return to camp frustrated. I know how the bulls felt. Even though I saw 12 grizzly bears during the last 2 weeks, most were up higher and feeding on blueberries. There were a lot of berries on Gloom Mountain where I was camped, but so far I didn't have any trouble or see any bears up close to me. When I went down after one of the moose, I did scare up a bear and couldn't believe how fast it ran through the dwarf birch and willow brush. Coming back down from a calling sequence, I crossed a wet area on the dark trail through the alder brush on my way back to camp. Looking down, I noticed huge paw prints laying over my tracks. I got an eerie feeling because I didn't think I was gone all that long, but I never did see the bear. No matter how cautious I was, I did accept some risk to hunt the moose. I know how dangerous the rutting bulls can be from previous hunts where my friend got gored from one that he had wounded. But these bears are different because they are less visible and have the option to stalk me if they so desire. I like feeling a part of nature, therefore accepting and controlling the inherent fear associated with tromping around in grizzly bear country is my responsibility. I do carry a .44 Magnum handgun, but I realize that its limitations are immense, and I mainly carry it for psychological support. At the end of the 2nd week, I moved camp down to the lake to meet my pilot. I had to decide whether to stay here or continue to hunt moose or take off for caribou hunting grounds. I just finished eating lunch and stood up to wash my dish when I saw something small and brown slide along the ground between the black spruce. My second look confirmed a wolverine 30 yards away. I wasn't sure if it was legal for me to shoot with the licenses I had, so I grabbed my video camera and snuck toward him. It was very exciting to capture the wolverine on film. It didn't stay around very long, and soon as I moved around a spruce tree to get a better look, it saw me and started off with great speed and agility across a minefield of hummock. I wasn't in its presence very long, but at least I can say I saw a wolverine. Sitting near my campfire at the end of the day, I just got that feeling of being watched. Turning around behind me, I saw a huge brown bear coming down a slight ridge, angling slightly toward me. I got up slowly and reached in my tent and grabbed the pistol just inside the door. I immediately felt the slight breeze and the thin smoke from my fire blowing directly at the bear. It knew I was there, but continued to advance towards me. The bear's stride was slow and deliberate. His feet made no sound as he rolled them down on the sphagnum-covered ground. His claws were ivory white, indicating an older bear. As he reached the bottom of the hill and started up the next one, I yelled out, "Hey, hey!" just to make sure it knew I wouldn't back down. The bear continued to walk, but it never took its eyes off me. 25 yards separated us. I held the gun, but didn't point it at the bear. When it crested the next hill, it turned away and stood there with its rump toward me. Feeling less threatened, I reached for my video camera and began filming. The footage that was captured was not all that compelling. It only showed a bear as it walked away. But whenever I view that footage, it sends a chill down my spine as I'm brought back to that evening on the lake. 25 minutes later, it was dark, and now I only had the wall of the tent separating me from a bear that was most likely still nearby. I gathered dry limbs and brush to pile a ring around my tent, but it brought little comfort to a troubled night's sleep. Knowing what I saw and heard, I wouldn't be able to hear his approach anyway. The bear just let me know that he was the king of the beasts in this mountain valley, and he did not fear me. I could only assume that some of the bears around here are used to coming to the lake and finding the meat cache of successful hunters. Apparently, he didn't care for a little bit of dehydrated food because I never saw him again. The next day, my pilot dropped in right on time. He was surprised to hear I was seeing as many bull moose as I was, but I think he was even more puzzled by my selectivity. After watching film footage of several of the bulls I called in and passed up, he commented, "Boy, you're picky. Some of those bulls are clearly legal." He also said that warm weather we were having caused a delay in the caribou herds, and many of his other clients were not seeing too many, and success was way down from previous years. Based on my love for moose and the many close calls I was having, I decided to stay where I was and hunt moose during the final week. We said our goodbyes, and by the time the pilot turned the plane around and headed into the wind for a liftoff from the lake surface, I'd already dropped the poles on my tent and was tying it to the top of my pack frame. By nightfall, I had it pitched again in the same spot I vacated on Gloom Mountain. The second pack end didn't seem as bad as the first. I guess all the weight training and conditioning I did during the summer paid dividends. I tried to lift weights 3 days a week and get a good cardiovascular workout by cutting my 1.5 acre lawn with a push mower while wearing my freighter frame pack loaded with 80 pounds of salt or dog food. More and more of the bulls were seen with cows. One particularly large bull had a huge bull-shaped antlers when viewed from broadside. When I see the bull shape, it indicates very wide palms. This bull had that and more. The palms were lined with points, and whenever he gave me a brief head-on look, I could see that he had multiple points to his brow palms. He wasn't extremely wide overall, but was clearly over 60 inches. I really wanted to get a shot at the bull, but he had 6 or 7 cows with him already. My first impulse was to use what had been working well for me so far, so I let out a long, drawn-out cow and heat call. The moose were on the side hill, and I could see them in the open. I couldn't get much closer, but could see the bull's reaction to my calling. He heard me and started to come down in my direction, but a couple of the cows would have no part of him leaving them. They ran down in front of the big bull, and one of them appeared to lie down in front of him. As soon as she went down, she got right back up and started to lean on him. The second cow got in front of him to the side and effectively blocked his path. I couldn't hear if the cows were emitting any vocalizations, but the massive bull started grunting and popping every so often. He had a very dark brown coat, and his underside was nearly black. There were too many eyes to try crawling in closer, and the cows convinced the bull not to respond to my cow calls, so I decided to challenge him by becoming a bull myself. I started grunting like a bull and raking the brush around me with an old shoulder blade bone I had found. It took a while, but eventually the bull started to show some interest in me, but he only walked further away before starting to thrash an isolated willow bush. I could see all of the cows. Some had moved off into heavy cover or were lying down. I thought that if I backed off and got back into some cover myself, I could then try to get out and around the harem, but that would mean I would temporarily lose eye contact. As I climbed through the tag alders and found ditches through the willow parks, I was always concerned about what the moose were doing. Eventually, I got within 70 yards from where they were and slowly peeked out for a look. I couldn't believe there was not a single moose in sight. I slowly stepped out further and then heard some crashing to my left. Creeping up to a slight hill where I could see down toward the east, I could see the antlers of the bull as he was crashing off through the brush. It didn't look like they were running from me. It appeared more like the bull was chasing after one of the cows, much like a white-tailed buck during the rut. I spent the rest of the afternoon trying to get out in front of them while keeping my scent away from their noses. Eventually, I lost them down in the tag alders and black spruce swamps at the lower portion of the valley. It was a long, lonely walk back to camp. I didn't call or glass as often on the far west side of Gloom Mountain because most of the bulls that came up from that direction generally veer right off the hill and cross the valley on the south side. But on Tuesday of the last week, I was cow calling from the west side and a young bull with a 36-inch rack came running from the alders and worked his way up to the base of Gloom Mountain. I couldn't believe how far he came. It must have been over a mile. In a short time, he had climbed the steep slope and was making his way through the blueberry bushes I was laying low in. I didn't want him to see me or mistake me for another moose. Fluid was pouring out of his nose. His eyes were bloodshot and focused. For a young bull, he was really worked up. Eventually, he got all the way to the top and caught my scent. Although I was very entertained by the juvenile bull and I captured his escapades on film, a flash of white at least a mile away caught my eye. It was another bull coming in. With the small bull out of the way, I pulled out all the stops on the second one. I first started out with the cow call, then threw in some bull grunts. He was coming straight in, but instead of climbing the hill, he skirted the bottom and started to parallel the base. Along the bottom, there was an open bog, and the bull decided to walk around it on the north side, taking a path 200 yards from the base. Just before I left the vantage point of the hill, I stopped to glass the bull. His antlers were at least 64 inches wide, with good palm width and four brow tines to his side. His palms were lined with stout points that totaled over 30. This bull had points all the way up, indicating he was in his prime. Other bulls might be wider, but they tend to lose points and have squared off palms as they get old. This bull also had a peculiar coat of golden brown guard hairs from the middle of its side all the way up over the shoulder hump. There was almost a perfect line at that midway point going down where his lower coat was a deep chocolate brown. I named him Old Golden Boy. I tried to get him to turn and cross the swamp by banging and clashing the dried scapula with a leg bone that I carried in my pack. I found that the sound of clashing bone often simulates the fight in a bull. They will sometimes come in like a knight to rescue the damsel in distress, especially if I throw in a cow call in the mix. Like I said, I pulled out all the stops on this bull, but none of them worked to alter his course. After I made it to the swamp, I even scooped water and let it pour out of my canteen and run into the pool. I heard the sound of running water that simulates the urinating of a cow moose in heat was supposed to bring in a bull that is on the fence. I'd never tried it until now. The only drawback is that the sound does not carry very far, so the bull has to be very close. At any event, it did not work in my case. The bull continued on, ignoring my trips to deceive him. I had to back off a little and did my best to get around the swamp and set up in a bottleneck where the willow brush entered the deep spruce. The wind was at the bull's back, but the deep water of the swamp slowed me down too much, so I couldn't get to the end before the bull that I had come all this way for got there first. I had to back out before my scent trail screwed everything up. I couldn't just let him go, so I climbed back up to the base of Gloom Mountain to regain my visual advantage. It took a while, but the next time I saw Old Golden Boy, he was over a mile away and heading out between the lake I had landed on in Gloom Mountain. I would not be able to catch up to him, so I went back to camp and ate a midday lunch. After lunch, I couldn't help but go back to the north side and glass over the swamp that I just got done playing in. I did not watch for long before I noticed a large bull headed out toward the west. It was Old Golden Boy. I couldn't believe he had gone all the way to the east side of Gloom Mountain and got lost in the spruce only to go do an about face and go back in the direction he had come from. I tried to call, but he was too far to hear me in the wind. I didn't hesitate any further. I just grabbed my stuff and went down after him. The train was fairly open, but there were many swells in the land, and Old Golden Boy would come in and out of view as both he and I went up and down the humps in the ravines. I got to within 300 yards once, but when the bull went down into a grove, I lost sight of him and couldn't do anything about it. I just couldn't chance getting upwind. This bull was going somewhere, and I couldn't stop him. The next day started out routine for me. I first glassed the south valley, then the east side, and finally I moved to the northwest corner of the plateau and looked out. The wind was very heavy, as it had been all night and day. Everything was moving and wind speeds were at least 50 miles per hour. My eyes watered as the cool air blew in my face. After watching for a while, I noticed a moose way out there, at least 3 miles. I loaded the spotting scope and dialed him in. Taking a second look, I was elated to see it was Old Golden Boy, the bull that had me whirling the previous day, and my mind raced most of the night. He was more than twice the distance that I had lost him the day before, but in the same direction that I had chased him. The bull was still moving, but he seemed to be standing around and feeding more and more. I didn't want to commit to another chase, but I was longing for another chance at him. It was about 3 p.m. when the bull finally bedded down. I marked the spot where he lay. His antlers were facing away from me and shone like a beacon in a bed of red-leaved huckleberry bushes. I didn't know how long he would stay there, so I plotted a course and went after him for the third time in 2 days. Climbing up and down the swells, I hurried along and eventually reached the last hump by 4:30 p.m. The terrain looked different from this perspective, and I hoped I had marked the correct clump of spruce. I slowed down and began stalking. He had to be close. Moving through the evenly spaced spruce trees was easy because the dwarf birch was low, and most of the huckleberry bushes down low still had the red and orange leaves, which muffled my long stride. The wind was still roaring, and there seemed to be no lull in its gusts. This was classic Alaska. Any noise I made went undetected by the bull. As I stepped out from behind a spruce tree, I saw him mid-stride to my right. Once my foot landed, I took the step back and shielded myself with the spruce. Old Golden Boy was looking the other way, directly into the wind. He was bedded 25 yards away. His antlers looked bigger than ever, and he would most likely score close to 220 Pope and Young inches. There was another small spruce about halfway to the moose, so I crouched and began to crawl toward it. Vegetation grows relatively slow in Alaska, and there were many game trails. I used the indentation of the trail as I crawled, so only a small portion of my backpack protruded above the blueberry bushes. I successfully reached the small spruce and slid around it to the left while nocking an arrow. My heart pounded through my knees, and I hoped the bull's sixth sense wouldn't kick in just yet. The massive bull was lying there in a low spot in the sphagnum moss like a dog. The lower part of his body was folded over toward me with its front legs sticking out. The upper portion of his chest was upright while his head and neck were turned unnaturally away. There were clumps of grass and hummocks all around, and his weight appeared to sink his body down into the spongy ground. Staying on my knees, I rose up from my hunched over position and stretched out for the shot. Drawing the 78-pound Brackenberry recurve was so easy, and the arrow left with a snap. Its journey ended in 12 yards, buried in the side of the moose. Upon impact, the bull let out a deep grunt as it bolted to its feet. His huge antlers swung like great airplane wings as Old Golden Boy turned to look at me. His glare was only momentary before he charged off into the brush. I felt so small at that moment and could relate to Captain Ahab's launching of his harpoon into Moby Dick, the great white whale. As soon as the moose rose to his feet, I knew my arrow hit directly behind the shoulder, but was very high in his chest cavity. I misjudged the lower target, which I would have preferred. In hindsight, I would have almost had to shoot through a fine layer of sphagnum moss in order to pierce the heart region. Nonetheless, I felt good about the hit and clean broadside penetration of the Zwicky-tipped 22-19 arrow shaft. After standing up, I watched the bull slow to a walk as it entered a grove of spruce trees and never saw him come out. I couldn't believe my good fortune. Passing up all of those other bulls and getting 3 chances at a bull of my dreams, I couldn't have scripted it any better. to go from a busted plan of a moose caribou combination hunt to a 3-week solo hunt for moose during a year that the caribou hunting turned dry and was all that any hunter could ask for. This hunt was spiced with close encounters with moose, grizzlies, and wolverines. I even got to see and film a wolf. Everything about this hunt was pouring through my head. I mean, this was the last possible day and final hours to kill a moose and still be able to pack it out to the lake before I rendezvous with the pilot on Saturday morning. I was so high I could barely contain myself. I had several emotional events occur during this hunt, including thoughts of the loss of my younger brother Greg, which occurred that past June. Talk about emotional highs and lows. Greg died on the same day my older brother Steve was ordained a Jesuit priest. All of that was put on the back burner as my thoughts were now on the bull moose. I must have looked at my watch 2 dozen times as I waited the customary time before tracking the wounded game. Eventually, my watch said it was time, so I began the trailing. I found a lot of blood right away, and the bull stayed on the trails all the way. Looking primarily at the ground, my focus was on blood droplets pooled around crimson leaves shed by blueberry bushes. Raising my eyes, occasionally looking up ahead, I hoped to shorten the tracking by identifying an antler or golden brown hide. But what was this? An opening in the dense spruce? Hey, that's the river over there already. I knew the river had to be down in this end of the valley somewhere, and the increase in spruce trees told of lower elevation, but I didn't think the water was this close at all. Looking back down to the ground, the blood told the story too well. The bull made a left turn onto a new trail and headed directly to the river. My heart sank as I followed heavy blood right to the riverbank, and old Golden Boy's tracks left no doubt. He went into the water. This river was incredible. It was winding downstream from a glacier-fed lake. It had a very rapid flow of over 5 feet deep and at least 70 yards across. There were no hills around, so I climbed a tree to get a sight advantage of the opposite shore. All I could see was more heavy cover. This would be nothing for a moose to cross, but for me, I'd have to swim. There is no way I could stay upright in that deep current. Even if I did cross, I would have to cross back again and then hike 3 miles and climb to the top of Gloon Mountain to reach my tent, all the while being chased by hypothermia. We can prepare for a lot of things, but to have all the necessary gear to cover 100% of scenarios faced in this frontier would be near impossible. The gear I needed most at that time was common sense. I did search downstream for a mile and a half, hoping for some sign of the bull climbing out on the bank or finding its carcass up high in the brush or wedged against a rock pile as the river snakes through the wilderness. A strange feeling of fear also started to set in as I walked past many dried and rotten salmon along the banks. Most were not very fresh, but still had the image of the feeding bears could not be pushed away from my thoughts. The roar of the wind and the rush of the water left me defenseless to hear a bear. With fading hope, I went back to my original entry point and walked upstream for another good mile. No further clues were found. The bull must have had enough strength to cross, if only I could have shot a little lower. But wait, there would be time to beat myself up over this later. I was out of ideas and hope, but still needed the strength to climb back to camp. By the time I got halfway up Gloom Mountain, I was so played out I could only walk 20 to 30 yards at a time. I was still wet with sweat, and the wind was starting to cut through the layers of wool, forcing a chill. I was physically and emotionally spent and still had to make the top to find my tent in the dark. That night, I relived the day. The joys of finding old Golden Boy again and actually getting a shot off after a hard stalk will always be with me, but so will the slamming of nature's door with the sign that reads, "No human will cross this river." I came to terms with no recovery by knowing that many predators wound some of their prey. A cougar slashes out at the flank of a mule deer, cutting deeply into flesh but missing the hamstring. A hawk grabs a rabbit but momentarily slips its grip, giving the rabbit time to drop into its hole, mortally wounded. A fallen brown bat bites a marauding skunk before it gets eaten. The skunk contracts the fatal rabies virus. I hesitate to speak of my own wounded moose, but if I am to learn and teach others of my mistake, I felt I must bring it up here. I must remind myself again that a clean and quick kill is our goal. In that end, lower shots in the chest cavity are much preferred. Lesson learned. I should not have shot at the bedded animal. Friday evening came, and it was finally time to pack up to the lake and to prepare for my departure. My only hope now was to see if the pilot could fly over the area where I had last seen the moose. We did get a chance to make a few passes flying over, but the weather was turning bad and we had to make it through a mountain pass before the clouds socked us in. I tried to call a few friends who had planes, but none were immediately available to go back and search. This 3-week hunt had to be one of my most memorable and one that I found so much treasure. I saw over 40 bulls that ordinarily would fulfill my desires for any hunt, but this time I knew what I had left behind. My only hope was that I could become a better hunter and person because of it. Where there is pain, there is learning. Now, that's a valuable lesson there and well handled there, I think, with the way Mike wrote about it. Fantastic story, man. What an adventure. Sure makes you yearn to go up there to Alaska, doesn't it? Well, Mike, I appreciate that one there. And just for a preview, the next chapter is The List. All right. Not many clues given away with that chapter title. Any case, thanks for tuning in, guys. And we'll be back soon.
If you have a question, topic, or guest that you'd like to hear about, log on to iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Rate the podcast, and in the review, leave your question, topic, or guest suggestion. Any questions posted will be answered at the beginning of the next recorded podcast. Topics and guest suggestions will be considered and pursued. Additionally, the rating will help the podcast grow. You can further support the podcast by logging on to the Stalker Stickbows website and purchasing a Western Bowhunter Podcast t-shirt or window sticker from the Stalker store. Thanks for your support. I come down here.